Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. And today, I'm honored to have a very special guest with us, Dr. Paul Yu, the provost of Revell College at University of California in San Diego. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So let me tell the audience a little bit about you. Dr. Yu was born and raised in Hong Kong. He came to the United States on a student visa and studied at Caltech for his undergraduate degree in physics and then a graduate degree in applied physics. He joined the UC San Diego faculty in 1983, where he became a distinguished professor in the electrical and computer engineering department in 2012. He established a laboratory at the ECE to investigate devices and materials research for optical communications and high-speed electronic circuits. And he graduated more than 36 PhD students who pursue productive careers in industry, academia, and government. Since 2014, he's been serving as the provost of Revell College, which is more than 5,000 students registered. And as provost, he's committed to an environment of inclusiveness as a blending spirit from residential areas to the classroom, from Revell Commons to the outside community. Revell students represent a fascinating variety of talents and backgrounds, and he's engaged in fostering such a diversity to meet the challenges of the ever-changing society. And Paul, I omitted a lot of your biography because you are a very distinguished person who's done a lot in your life, but I wanted to focus on your role as provost, but that's okay.
Oh, yes, thank you. Yes, certainly. It's my pleasure to do so.
I work with teenagers and young adults, and many of them are about to enter college and are in college, and so I hope to focus this conversation on the college experience, but perhaps you can start off by telling us a little bit about your own background. How did you end up moving from Hong Kong to the United States, for example?
As a teenager, I recall, you know, almost like half a century ago, that, you know, my exposure to United States was actually through two of my teachers in high school who were teaching in Hong Kong for temporary 1 year, 2 year when they are doing a education abroad study. And this was through those interactions with these two teachers that let me ask the question, what is it like in the United States? What education system would it be like? How do they foster the teenagers to become adults and professionals? So I would say that I was very fortunate to be among those who actually succeeded in applying to colleges and succeeded to get in one. And then the rest is here. And I never have any thought of doing otherwise. I think I make the right decision of coming to United States and be part of the community here.
And when you came to the United States, was your intention to stay here, or did you think you might go back?
In the very beginning, to be honest, I was thinking that I would get a good education, perhaps work for a short time, and then I would, return back home, and then, continue my career there. Today, I think that the decision that I made in over the decades, you know, first was coming down here to San Diego in 83, and then a couple points in my career, so I also think about, leaving, to work somewhere else, not necessarily back to Hong Kong. So there was something that holding me back, I would say that. It's the people, the system over here in San Diego that I think that's a lot more that I can do and contribute.
So many students, when they go off to college, they obviously leave home, and you left the country. Was that difficult to leave your family behind? How did you negotiate that?
I would not say it's an easy thing. I would say that for my case, actually, I'm the only one among my siblings at that time who think about leaving. That's home sweet home. People think it's more comfortable, less headache to go through all the traumas of, going to a different place, different society, different culture. So, even for United States, I would say that for students who live their own hometown and go to another state, another city, it's a challenge. It takes somewhat more discussion. I discussed with my parents at that time, and I got different opinions. My father think it's a good idea. My mom said it's not a good idea. So it is something that, that everyone has to go through that discussion with their family about it. Yeah.
So many students, when they arrive in college, feel kind of lost and out of place. And this is American students. So what challenges did you face as a freshman in college you had to work through?
So I would say this way, looking back, that's also the same reason that I do what I'm doing now. It's the connection between, the student and the university through the teachers and the counselor. They go in both directions. So as a first-gen student, I do not have, know-how when I was a student. And I always emphasize that to my students these days at the Raphael College, that especially those are first-gen students whose parents never attend colleges, is to be able to reach out to people who have known a little bit more to find resources, which I didn't do when I was their age. And looking back, that was one of the things that, regrettably, that I should have done so.
Interesting. So how did you go? Did you know you wanted to go into physics to start with? How did you end up majoring in that field?
I always thought of STEM area like physics or mathematics. However, when I first started out, that was not my original major. My original major was electrical engineering. And I found myself, not well prepared in high school to get into that major. That is mostly a hand-on experience that I was lacking. So I searched around, and I went to different fields, including mathematics, including chemistry, and then I, at the end of my freshman year, I finally settled down with physics. And that also has to do with my freshman advisor, who really encouraged me to actually talk to people, especially professors, to get input. And I thought, that could be something that I can learn more, and then before I settle down with a profession in the end.
It's interesting. I'm a graduate, as you know, of UC San Diego and of Revell College. And one of the things I appreciate about Revell is its emphasis on a broad basic curriculum in the first 2 years. Maybe you can elaborate about that in a moment, but know, Caltech is, seems to me much more specialized. So in retrospect, do you wish you had a broader undergraduate education, or did it just fit your needs?
Yes. Okay. I may not be defending Caltech, so I can still remember the education curriculums at that time. It was something like 2 years of mathematics, which is calculus, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, let's put it that way, and then 2 years of physics. And then we do have the one course per quarter that has to be general education. That can be, you know, the history, language, economics. That will be for everyone. Okay. So in terms of number of course or units, it's actually not small. Okay. And then if people, the difference is different fact that, you know, people are young when they start out college. If they do not know what they would need later on, choosing the something differently could mean that their education could be compromised. On the other hand, at Vassar College, we have actually more, I would say, the pathway for students to take the general education, and that is really purposeful and directing in some sense, but nowadays we have more choices. So I feel that's really a difference in terms of, you know, the provision of the different doors for students is similar.
So a lot of the older teenagers and college students that I counsel complain that they don't know what they're really interested in. They haven't found their passion. What do you advise a student who's trying to figure out what I should be doing?
Yes, so we always say that follow your passion, I do not disagree, but I think also people have to first do a self-reflection and see what would be one able to do, and stretch a little bit about the ability, and then not to overstretch, so that they can have opportunity, you know, to access to things that they can do. For example, if one is very good with music, maybe do something a little bit more challenging when they are, you know, here in college. Really take tougher classes that can allow them to gain access to higher, you know, skill in that area. And then see if they still like it and then follow it. And I feel that a lot of people that come in talking to experts and say that, oh, maybe I should do it. But they actually first to see whether those interests can be sustained.
So you were had a very successful career in electrical and computer engineering, and yet you took on the role of provost in 2014. Did you have to think a lot about it, or why did you make the switch?
So I would not say I've been a successful professor. I would say that I have done, you know, my job, and then did, you know, do my work to coach graduate students to do their dissertation studies and so on. So what I find out, what I'm missing is when I was actually before that, I was a chair of the electrical and computer engineering department for a couple of years. And through those years, I talked to a number of undergraduates, actually get close to some of them to understand the nuance of being a student, undergraduate student at San Diego campus. So that was make me wondering what can be done better for students who are coming here as a first year or who are coming here as a transfer student. Okay, that's 2007. Actually, I've been thinking about, you know, the issues for over 7 years, and then finally I come to a conclusion. Why think about it? Just go there and talk to people, talk to the students directly, and work with them at the colleges. So then I think it's just make up my mind when opportunity arises that I will be a follower.
So, can you tell us, what does a provost do? What is your job description?
Okay. Yes, many people ask me what is the job description of being a provost. It's a pretty open-ended job description. Of course, you know, we are being in charge administratively of a college. We have our staff member. We also have many affiliate faculty from different departments that we have to work with to make sure that our undergraduate students in the college will receive the proper instruction in the classes and so on. And also the students actually get a degree, directly from the UCSD but through the colleges. So that's some obligation that as the provost, we have to look at their academic performance. And then, you know, consult with the faculty affiliate with the college to make changes so that they can be kept updated in terms of not just the general situation, but if we hear something that can be improved for the majors, we also get those messages to the department for them to consider. So day to day, you know, it's never a dull moment, but I constantly meeting with colleagues, administrators, as well as majority time is spending on the students.
Did you find any surprising challenges in being provost that you didn't expect?
I would say over the years, I'm very alert to surprises, but I never think that the surprise will be troublesome to me, because I'm actually trained as an engineer. Is always try to solve problems. So, yes, we sometimes have very challenging situations. When we talk a lot about students with mental health issues, those are things that I do not realize the extent until I became the provost in 2014. So, because all the times when students take classes from the instructors, very few actually stay behind to talk about the mental health issue. But they will talk to the college, they will talk to the provost or the deans of students about what's going on.
Can you explain what the dean of students does as opposed to you?
So the dean of student affairs, each college will have one, the group of people that are led by the dean of students that will be the first line of the people who face student facing in terms of the experience beyond academic life at the colleges or at the university. And that particular dean actually is reporting to the provost, as well as another dean who is doing the academic advising. And so I am very close to both deans so that I can know what is going on before I talk to the student that will be making an appointment to see me.
So it sounds like your days are pretty full with a lot of activities in coordinating different roles of the provost. Do you ever face a challenge that you can't get around? Like, what do you do when you can't move forward despite your best efforts? How do you handle that?
Yes, we at the UC San Diego, we actually have altogether 8 colleges, and we do have some community support from the other provosts. We have a so-called Council of Provosts that meets every week for a couple of hours. And that's where we actually commonly share our success and concerns and challenges. And then if we cannot figure out individual provosts collectively, we always have a good way of, proceeding forward. And, you know, there's a major support network that we have in UC San Diego that to work out that to the best way to support our students.
So you're lucky to be in a university where you have a number of other people who have the same role as you do. I guess if you're more isolated, you might have a network outside of the university with other provosts.
That may happen, but we actually do not need to go outside. I think we're fortunate that we even internally, we have such a supporting system.
Yeah. So you've been provost a decade now. You were a college student, I guess, 45 years ago or thereabouts. The only reason I know that without thinking much is our training overlapped. I also was graduated in 1979 from UCSD when you were finishing Caltech. So how would you say what student space back then when you were a student differs from today?
Yes, so interestingly you asked this question. Yes, so we were just seeing the end of the Vietnam War when I joined the college. And we have nowadays a number of protests going on, also about a war happening in the Middle East. So remind me of the sentiment that we have in the early 70s. And technology advanced so much. We don't have social media, so people actually talk in isolation. Now we have more news network, social media network, so that we have been able to communicate more, if not better. Okay. So I think that's my comment is the world is more connected these days than before.
So when we come back, I want to explore this a lot more with you, comparing 40 years ago with today, because I'm hoping we can learn maybe some of the things we should adapt from the past, perhaps, or where we can go for in improving the current situation. We'll be right back after these messages. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Coming attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Anbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Anbar's renowned counseling practice, CenterPoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Anbar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At CenterPoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterPointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. A special guest, Dr. Paul Yu, Provost of Revell College at the University of California in San Diego. We are discussing what has changed over the past 45 years for undergraduates. And Paul, you mentioned social media. Do you want to tell us what you've seen as benefit and difficulties arising from social media now as compared to before?
Well, I would say that information are readily available through the social media. And however, ability to actually become discerning or distinguishing the truthfulness, or at least the utility of information, that gap still missing 40 years ago as well as now. So I look back some of the public media 40 years ago, through the newspaper or the television or radio, if they could be of different opinions and sometimes could be extreme. Okay, so students were able to actually analyze some of this by themselves or with their own domain or living in the community of more than 10 students, they can have meetings to talk over it. Nowadays, people are not meeting more because of the availability of the internet. They chat more. That has good things and bad things about it. When you see people eye to eye in a face-to-face meeting, I would say that it's easier to actually get into consensus. Over the chatting over time, message get washed away, or opinions seem to be, pushed aside purposely by not following the particular track of the chatting. So I feel that it's easier for people to manipulate the social media to either ignore or downsize some opinions at this stage, which can not be so easily done in a face-to-face meeting.
And social media, do you see it interfering with education, like in the classroom? Are people paying attention to phones as opposed to the professor? It seems to be more distractors available now.
Yes or no, because I think some students are able to do multitasking, and the faculty have to be somewhat adaptive to that. So I notice that the students are sometimes watching their cell phone or social media, laptop, and so on. But on the other hand, I have raised, my other instructor, to ensure the proper attention is for the student to watch what I'm doing with the blackboard or the PowerPoint, so that gain back the attention. So you're right. I have to sometimes repeat the message multiple times to reemphasize the point that they miss. Which is pretty common these days, and sometimes have to repeat the lectures, either also using social media, just record a video to recap some of the things that I thought they might have missed because they're so busy watching the news.
What about social interactions? If you witnessed, when people of young and young adults meet now in a group, they might all be on their phones, not interacting, which never happened 40 years ago. Do you have a comment about social life.
I'm glad that you point that out, because people might be sitting quietly in a hall texting each other, but not just raise their hand and then say that, okay, I like to raise this point. They just simply broadcast it over the chat room. So that actually could not be as effective if they speak out in the meeting rather than chat to each other. Then all this, I would say that micro talk or mini talks actually change the dynamics, and not easy to get a consensus that way.
Yeah, I think this is, in medicine, the same thing has happened when the physician is facing the computer as opposed to the patient. And somehow, I think as a society, we need to take a step back and ask ourselves, how can we improve our social interactions? Because I think the costs of this are going to become more, we're going to become more aware of it as the years go on, that kids don't know how to interact.
Yeah. So, this, I totally agree with you. I think that humans are social animals, so we are much better off learning from each other interactively than to rely on the scripts or something that is visually. I mean, our mind and not just our eyes, but also our hearing, they're all connected. And the more we actually connect that also with our hands, we learn better and deeper. Well, that's just maybe my own bias, but I'm still old-fashioned. I'm still bring a pad of a notepad and write down things, whether I would read those what I wrote down or not, but I feel that I've been more connected to the idea I overheard by writing it down.
This generation also went through COVID, and where we were really isolated, forced isolation. How have students changed in what you've seen from pre-COVID to post-COVID, if they've changed?
Yes, it's difficult. More difficult to reach out when they just came out from the COVID, but they do not have the skill of social interaction. I would say that this graduating class that we have on campus, which will go through commencement in a couple of weeks' time, they are the COVID freshmen, meaning that the first 2 years, they actually are doing most of their lecture sitting in their room. So to get them out in the last 2 years to be able to interact with fellow students or the instructors has been a struggle. And I hope that we can persuade them to actually just interact. We do not have to have a purpose. We just interact, talk about nonsense, and then still be okay. Everything okay if we talk. So we invite every student, every faculty, and whenever we can, to get together. And sometimes some pizza or a beverage will be good too. Coffee and a soft drink. Yeah, they will come.
Are current courses offered still in-person and online, or are there only in-person courses?
Majority of the classes offered on campus are offered in-person. Okay. And, on the other hand, the attendance percentage is not like before COVID. We do see a gradual pickup in terms of percentage of students who attend classes. So we encourage students to be there, and we actually discourage sometimes to use podcasts and so on. Because if they're podcast students, we say, oh, we can always listen to the recording. And that defeats the purpose.
Yeah. Because I think when we give the access to the recordings, we enable students who want to avoid being in the classroom. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when we come back, I'd love to talk to you about what makes a successful student and what pitfalls students should avoid when they're in college. We'll be right back. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming Attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar, a special guest, Provost of Revelle College, Dr. Paul Yu. And thank you so much for sharing so much of your thoughts with us. I'm wondering if you can now please tell, if you're talking to, let's say, an incoming college student, what should they do to be a successful student? What kind of steps should they take?
Okay, so I've been talking to many students addressing the same questions. Many of them are coming to LaSalle College, UC San Diego, want to be a very successful student with high academic achievement. And I think that is a good thing that they think that way to start out. But then the question is, what exactly they would like to achieve beyond just academic? I think when we ask that question of the student, they start to startle a little bit, and they say that, well, getting a high GPA, should that be all? Or should I graduate faster than 4 years? Or things like that. So then we say disconnect. I think they are thinking about getting academic achievement high, just getting A's and B's and so on, will be the ultimate goal of college education. Yes, those are curriculum requirements. But at the same time, most importantly, have a community that they become proud of, aware of when they graduate. So it would be very sad that someone just sit in their room throughout the 4 years of the undergraduate without much interaction with other people. And there, these days, there are quite a few like that. And I would say that if we spot those students, I would go to them and say that, hey, let's come out, have a coffee, have some discussion, go do something, watch a movie, go to a play, and do something like most college kids should be doing instead of just study time. So people say that we'll have a quiz, we have an exam. I actually have students come to my class and say that, oh, provost, I have to leave because I have a quiz that I will be doing 2 hours from now. So at this time of this kind of time pressure tells me that they have not been managing their time well or their schedule well. So that become always catching up. So we should not live a life of catching up. They should have something that well planned and with some more elbow rooms to do other things beyond study. Okay. And networking, social networking or professional networking in college time actually is very cheap and very easy to do. Joining student organization, you know, may take up a couple of hours, but the benefit is tremendous. It's almost like investing a little bit of time, and there will be a lifetime, lifelong connection forever. So I always like to emphasize to students, you're here to connect. You're not here just to learn, but to connect to other people. I hope I addressed your question, Juan.
Yeah, no, I think you emphasized that college is more than just academics. And, you know, when we went into the COVID routine and people pretended college was just academics online, that wasn't the case. That's, a lot was lost for those several months. So you sort of talked about things that students do wrong and what they can do to be successful, but can you live, what other pitfalls do you see students go into? For example, one of the things I've seen among patients I've counseled is drugs. There's unfortunately a lot of alcohol and drugs at some points in some places on campus. So what do you, if you're a student, what advice do you have for that?
Yes, so I would say they, if they have some curiosity, we have training that to educate or to make students aware of the why it is not good to their own health to take drugs, to be abusive of certain things, like maybe even time spending, overspending on the video gaming, for example. Well, I'm not against video gaming, but I think that they should be appropriately spend time on that. So some of those things that spell to me that these people are more or less isolated. And they really should go out to make some friends. If they can, take advantage of the academic environment, they can actually meet with professors, TAs. If they cannot help them more, then come to talk to the colleges, talk to the dormmates, suitemates, and have something which is more in-depth discussion rather than just pass along, meeting at lunch in the cafeteria, and then stay high and then disappear. So I think my interaction with students tells me that people take drugs, for curiosity in the beginning, but then eventually they become addicted. That's really, really sad. Yeah.
What, so you mentioned some resources the college has. They can go to speak to other counselors at Revell, like a student is dealing with stress and wants to deal with it in a healthy way, what resources are there for them?
Well, we have a number of partners, stakeholders on campus that we are available, and actually we can make reference to whenever the student with a certain difficulty or certain question for us. We can always cite them to people who can do it the best. For example, if they are not sure if they have violated some regulation or laws and so on, we have the student legal service. If they need psychological counseling, we have a department of more than 40 people to help them. So such, I would say that groups does exist, and all they have to do is to reach out to us. Or reach out to people that knows this from the dormitory that these resources are available for them. Yeah. The worst thing is not to speak to anyone and then to internalize and then until we get to a point that they become really challenging to fix the problem.
And I want to underscore what you're saying. It's so important to reach out. And there's so many people out there who are willing to help should you reach out. So I'm hoping that college students listening to this who might be feeling bad that there is help out there.
Yeah. And we also, one thing that our network is not just waiting for students to show up. We're also listening actively to the instructor as well as to teaching assistants or instructional assistants. When they see something unusual, just simply if the students didn't show up regularly to class, they used to be, then they are learners. And then we start to, to pay attention to the student, and then sometimes we feel it's compelling that we have to ask the student to come in to do a welfare check on them.
You know, students are supposed to be young adults, but oftentimes they engage in activities which, irresponsible teenage type of activities. And when we come back from the break, I want to talk to you about, as an administrator in the college, I would guess you're frustrated when students make the wrong choices, and I'm wondering what you think your responsibility is and what actions can you take as an administrator to help students make better choices for themselves. We'll be right back after these messages. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com. or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At CenterPoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to CenterPoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar, a special guest. Provost Paul Yu of Revell College at University of California in San Diego. And I'm wondering, as an administrator, you must be frustrated when students make bad choices for themselves. What is your role? What can you do for them to help them out?
So every college or every university has a team of experts or legal experts to look at different kinds of violations. Some are academic related, like cheating in coursework and so on. some are more conduct related. They also being looked upon as violations if they do something inappropriate. So oftentimes when we look at student, you know, group which is 18 to 22, they are not totally adult yet. The frontal lobe is still developing. So that's the time that they make wrong decisions. So we are really mindful of that. But on the other hand, we would like to actually ask the questions. What would be the best way to let them know that what they are doing could be better, could be better coached, or better guided? So somehow that, you know, the punishing is one avenue. I mean, telling them, hey, you do this to get sanction or warning or probation or whatever. Okay, that's one way. The other one is really for them to actually see to it that themselves, that they actually are not doing something appropriate, and that's full education. So we do have courses or social media channels that we can point the student to, and so that they are not being singled out. And this is just socially unacceptable things. So we can always hear this about, you know, when talking about cheating. So people say that, oh, we just do it to harm to ourselves. We should not be punished for, you know, for we not learning ourselves. But on the other hand, they didn't realize that they're also harming other people. If their example could be a bad influence to other students in the same classroom. So so things like that, like restoration of justice and so on, those are the things that we keep on emphasizing to students that we're living in a community. We should have a responsible behavior and action to other people, towards other people. And I would say that over the last couple of decades, we gradually mature ourselves in our system. I think that, you know, comparing to 40 years ago, that we do not know what will be the standards and so on. Now, among the different universities in the United States, and sometimes also related to those in Canada and overseas, we do come up with a guideline and a process that we commonly adopt to help students out of those difficult moments.
Yeah. So to switch gears one last time, so in our last segment, I'd like to ask our guests, based on their extensive life experience, what two or three tips would you give students or just people in general, even people who aren't going to college, what are life tips you'd like to share that they can implement today to improve themselves?
I would like first to emphasize that is try not to be isolated. Always have some, I would say, not just friends, but also mentor. One should be entitled, to more than one friend and one mentor. We are always very happy to see people that actually can get more advice from people. And don't be afraid. I mean, people are generous. They're sincere. If you ask them for advice, for help, okay. So, and never hesitate to seek help, to seek counseling. And if one can have opportunity to learn, college is not the only place, but it's actually one of the best places to go to, because we have people basically doing that for us. Systematically. So whatever we can, try to do it, get opportunity to go to the college, go to the library, to meet people. Yeah. And I'm still on the online because I saw that there might be interruption.
So I missed the last thing you said, I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, because that's a phone ringing on my side, yeah.
So, and those tips, the tips you gave are applicable to anyone, in any really at any stage of life. I think that maintaining, for example, if you look to at geriatrics, older people who are retired, those key, having friends, having mentors. I guess when you're older, you have less mentors. You become a mentor. But and lifelong learning is the keys to a long life.
Yes, exactly. That's the lifetime learning. Lifelong learning is actually the key.
And so as a final question, so I don't know how long you're going to be provost for, but what would you like to see in the future in at Revelle College? What would you like to... What changes would you like to implement?
I would say I am blessed to be the provost for almost a decade. I've been affiliated with the college more since 1983, so for 4 decades. So I would like to see the college continue to have the close relationship between the faculty and student, not just the student and staff, but also, the faculty continue interacting through the curriculum and also through events that will bring the faculty and students together. Not a classroom, but outside of classroom, social interaction, so that students know that faculty are not the famous in whatever research they're doing, the actual people that they can talk to. So I think that this has been a good tradition in the college, and I hope it will continue to be so in the future years.
Yeah, I think in this day and age, learning to listen to one another and respect one another is something that we can all work on improving. And your vision seems to encompass that.
Yes. Thank you.
Dr. Yu, I'm so pleased to have had a chance to talk with you this morning and to learn so many different ways that, actually it's very interesting to hear how you picked your career because, again, some of the students listening to this broadcast are facing that kind of question for themselves. And it was fascinating to hear how your career evolved from science to becoming a student leader of students through the position of provost, and it's interesting very much to hear about how students have changed and the challenges we've had to face both with social isolation with social media, ironically, and COVID, of course. And then ultimately, we need to go back, I think, as you said, to being socially integrated and, of course, lifelong learners, including in college and beyond. So those are lessons I took, and I'm sure there are many other lessons I've glossed over, but I really appreciate you sharing your wisdom and knowledge with us. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, Ron. Yes, so always, sir, we have hope for tomorrow. That's what I always tell the students. No matter how challenging today is, tomorrow will be better.
And on that note, we wish you all an excellent week. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.